For argument this morning is the Federal Trade Commission against World Media Brokers.
What's your compatriot doing here at Court Brown?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court.
Good morning, Mr. Grubb.
Opposing counsel for Federal Trade Commission. My name is Brian Grubb. I'm appearing on behalf of defendant appellants World Media Brokers, Incorporated, doing business under various trade names, individual defendant appellants, George Emick and Anita Rapp. Your Honors, the issues before the Court this morning are twofold. We challenge only the joint and several liability of individual defendant appellants Anita Rapp and George Emick for the actions of defendant appellants.
I'm worried about appellate jurisdiction. Why are we here? There are other defendants whose liability remains to be determined. What is here?
Your Honor,
we don't seem to have a final judgment.
Your Honor, there was final judgment entered in respect to Mr. Emick, Ms. Rapp, and
there was an injunction entered, but you don't seem to be appealing from the injunction. You're appealing only from the award of money damages. And you cannot use 1292A1 to appeal from an award of money damages. That appeal depends on 1291, final decision. And there isn't a final decision.
Your Honor, I believe there was a final decision in regards to the joint and several liability for the actions of George Emick and Anita Rapp in regards to the actions of the corporate defendants, World Media Brokers. That would have been the March 1st, 2004.
That is a preliminary injunction. It is not, as you have treated it here, a Rule 54B order. Rule 54B order is set out on a separate piece of paper and contains the terms of a money judgment. It isn't there. What you're doing, what the FTC seems to be doing, is treating a monetary term in an injunctive order as if it were a Rule 54B partial final judgment. But I've looked. There is no Rule 54B partial final judgment in this record.
Your Honor, again, I mean, we feel that the joint several liability of the individual defendants was improper. Judge St. Eve had entered an order on March 1st, 2004, holding Mr. Emick and Ms. Rapp jointly and severally liable for the actions of the corporate defendants on May 19th. There was an entry of 1999.
No doubt that that's what was done. The problem is there are other defendants whose liability remains to be determined. That's why it's classically a non-final order. For there to be a final and appealable order, the liability of all the defendants has to be determined.
Your Honor, I believe there was an entry of the permanent injunction on
We're now going in
June 22nd.
You cannot appeal a monetary award under 1292A1. But anyway, go ahead.
Your Honor, with all due respect, there were affidavits filed at all times throughout the course of litigation. October 16, 2003, there was an affidavit filed along with the motion for opposition for summary judgment. On March 15, 2004, and again on March 24, 2004, there were affidavits filed by Mr. Emick, which effectively refute the allegations.
Is there any reason why, if we do have jurisdiction, we should not summarily affirm for your violation of Circuit Rule 30? The rule requires counsel to include in the appendix the opinions of the district court, and it requires a certification by counsel that that's been done. Your appendix does not contain the district court's opinion, but it does contain a false certification that it was included.
Your Honor, I apologize to the court. It was overlooked.
There are basically two things we do in response to that. Either the lawyer is personally sanctioned, or sometimes we just summarily affirm for failing to prosecute the appeal according to the rules.
We seek leave of mercy on the court for counsel's failure to properly include in the appendix.
Of course, summary affirmance wouldn't be an option if we don't have jurisdiction.
No, Your Honor, it would not be.
Then you might live to fight another day.
No, Your Honor, it would not be. Your Honor, if I may continue, we do believe Judge St. Eve did improperly grant summary judgment against George Yemek and Anita Rapp, holding them jointly and severally liable. Ms. Rapp was nothing more than a mere telemarketing consultant to the corporate defendants. She maintained her innocence throughout the entire course of litigation. Her facts were supported by an affidavit. Mr. Yemek again affirmed that those facts. We believe that there was improperly, there were genuine issues of material facts before the court. We believe that it was improper to grant summary judgment against them. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there are other questions at this time, Your Honor.
Certainly, Mr. Grubb. Mr. Abiad?
May it please the court, Your Honor. Imad Abiad for the Federal Trade Commission. If I may first address the appellate jurisdiction issue that you raised. Your Honor is correct that when Judge St. Eve issued her June 22nd order, there were still defendants in the district court, although that is no longer the case now. All the remaining defendants have in fact consented.
What has happened to the remaining defendants?
They've consented to permanent injunctions.
And what about monetary relief?
There were no monetary relief against the remaining defendants.
Would you provide us with those orders wrapping up the other defendants? Because if there's no other defendant open, then there wouldn't be much point in dismissing the appeal and waiting for it to be wrapped up. If it's already been wrapped up, we're done.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Please provide them to the court. That would help. Thank you.
Absolutely. Your Honor, if there were ever a case that's ripe for summary judgment, this has to be it. The appellants have really pointed to not a single material fact about which a trial is needed. They've consented, or they've not disputed the liability of the corporate defendants, and in fact, that is not an issue on appeal altogether. And as counsel for the appellants motioned, the only two people whose cases are here, Anita Rapp and George Yemek, the appellants also have conceded all the factual predicates for their liability. For an individual to be liable for the corporate acts under the Federal Trade Commission Act, they have to be either have directly participated in the deceptive activity, or that they have had the control and authority over the corporate defendants. And one additional fact would be required if, in fact, they would be liable for the monetary relief that Your Honor called in the consumer redress, which is that they knew or they should have known or had the awareness of those deceptive acts. And appellants have not really contested any of the factual predicates to those elements. Anita Rapp was a director. She was an officer. She managed the day-to-day activities of the telecommunications operation. She had prior knowledge of prior enforcement actions against those defendants. She herself was involved in at least one of them. She had a number of letters from the Canadian lottery authorities letting her know that, in fact, the sale and trafficking in foreign lottery is illegal in the United States. And she, in fact, had notice also from several consumers who have written to the defendants telling them that that was the case. The same with George Yemek. He was the owner, the director, and an officer of all the corporate defendants that are involved here. He himself wrote the telemarketing script that is patently deceptive in that it instructs the telemarketing operators that in response to a question from a consumer about whether what they were asking him to do or her to do was illegal, to say that, in fact, it is not. It is legal, that they've done it in all 50 states, that and they were trying to, again, mislead the consumers by saying that the maybe what the consumer was thinking of was, in fact, a U.S. Postal Service regulation that prohibits the sending of lottery tickets via mail, but that they didn't do that. And that's misleading in two ways. One is that the regulation does not cover only tickets, but in fact also all lottery-related material. Two, that it was not only the Postal Service regulations, but they're in fact criminal statutes that prohibit it. And three, that the defendants in fact did not limit themselves to sending only the materials. They did also send the actual lottery tickets when they were of the kind that was the daily scratch tickets. So the that leaves really no necessary facts for the liability of both George Yemek and Anita Rao. As to even the amount of the consumer redress, that itself came from their own admission of the sale of one of their companies in only a partial period of time from the one that was relevant here. So it leaves really no questions for the district to bother in having a trial to answer. And by the same token, many of those facts were again admitted by the appellants in their appellate briefs. So if there are no more questions, Your Honor, I'll just sit down.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Grubb?
Your Honor, just to address a couple of questions or a couple of statements from the FTC, the defendant appellants, Yemek and Rep, did contest allegations from the FTC. They did so in their original 56.1 responses. They did so in the affidavit of George Yemek in October 2003, and they did so again in the two affidavits of Mr. Yemek and Ms. Rep in March 2004. They effectively denied misrepresenting to consumers any fraudulent acts on behalf of corporate defendants. As a matter of fact, in 1998, Ms. Rapp sold all her ownership rights in two corporate defendants to Mr. Yemek. Now, the $19 million judgment entered jointly and severally against Ms. Rapp was only for the amount of ticket sales between 1999 and 2000 for corporate defendants. Ms. Rapp was not a director. She was not an officer at all of the corporate defendants at that time. She did have limited signing authority. She did have limited capacities in that position. She was merely kept on by Mr. Yemek as to ease the transition of business. There was nothing more than that. And at all times, Mr. Yemek believed he was acting under a good faith basis in regards to his actions. He did manage the day-to-day affairs. We're not denying that. He was the president. He was the officer. The fact of the matter is, was he able to review every telemarketing script and monitor daily every telemarketer? No, he was not able to. Could there have been a rogue out there somewhere misrepresenting consumers? There possibly may have been. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Yemek did take steps to effectively reprimand individuals who were in violation of his policies, and that included termination.
The problem is that the district court found that the policies and the basic scripts were themselves deceptive and proposed felonies, and indeed that your client's business involved committing felonies. I mean, surely it knew it was selling interest in lottery tickets. That was part of its inventory.
And Your Honor, that is the corporate defendants. That's not Mr. Yemek individually and or Ms. Rapp individually. We're solely arguing and that Mr. Yemek and Ms. Rapp should not be held jointly and severally liable for the actions of the corporate defendants, specifically World Media Brokers, 62454 Ontario Limited, and 63776 Firstel Group. There's no further questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Counsel. The case is taken under advisement.